Welcome to Everything is Changing. In each episode, we focus on circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water resources. I am Ahmetcan Uzlaşık. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. Today, we are at the UN House in Brussels with Mr. Christophe Ivetov.
Hello, I'm Christophe Ivetov. I'm the representative of the United Nations Industrial Development Organization to the European Union. I'm economic a lawyer by background, almost 30 years of experience of developing industries around the world. I have seen that there's really a need now for industrial diplomacy, I would say eco-industrial diplomacy, through my experience and contacting working with many countries around the world. I could see that this is a need to fill this gap.
Thank you again very much for being here. Today, our world is facing many overlapping crises, which can be best described as a global polycrisis, perhaps. From climate change to supply chain disruptions, we are facing many overlapping crises. What opportunities do you see emerging from this global polycrisis?
First of all, thank you for having me. It's true that every day in the news, we see this polycrisis that is manifested in many ways. But first, we had, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic. And then we discovered that our everyday life can be affected with the interruption of global supply chains. We didn't have the mask. We didn't have sometimes even the paracetamol or very simple things that we thought were obvious. But we discovered that, interruption in global supply chain can affect us. Then, of course, now we have the trade war, I would say, and that also highlights the importance of global supply chains. And we have, of course, all the catastrophes coming with the climate change. But in UNIDO, what we do, because we have an analysis of the, we have all the industrial statistics, so we can look at mega trends. And that are beneath. It's important not to be every day on the news, but also to look at well the big trends. And the big trends are the, of course, demographic transition and also the climate transition, the energy transition, I would say, linked to the climate. Also the global rebalancing of trade, but also the fourth industrial revolution. So when you look at those big trends, you see that industry is central. It's central because if you want to stop CO2 emissions, it's industry is central because industry is producing the energy we need, but also in our everyday life, whether it's the cars that we use, the transport in general, the buildings, everything we produce or we use as a consumer has industry in its center. So if it's through the transformation of industry that we can achieve all of those. Also, if you look at what makes the news today is the global rebalancing of trade, it's true that it's an industrial problem. That's why, you know, the US are putting those tariffs to rebuild their own manufacturing. And then it also highlights how much manufacturing is central for jobs, for innovation, and for the prosperity of all. To make it short, industry can bring solutions first to resolve the environmental and the climate crisis, and also to bring back prosperity where it needs.
As you stated, you say that industry is not the problem, but part of the solution. In your opinion, what would a truly sustainable industrial revolution look like in practice?
I mean, there was the Draghi's report that everybody is looking at, and also there was the Letta's report on consolidating the single market. Innovation is at the center. UNIDO were established in Austria, and in Austria there was a famous economist, Schumpeter, who is talking about innovation being the center of the economy. That you have what we call creative disruption, and that new companies with innovation distort the market, but bring new people on board, and that with more competition policies, those who have gained this innovation don't become monopolies, so you need to have a competition policy. And in Europe, there's an internal way of dealing with this is strengthening innovation internally, but also it's how to connect to the world, because if we go towards a more fragmented markets, it will help prosperity, not neither in Europe nor in other countries. So that's why Europe at the moment, with the global gateway approach, would like to connect also with the rest of the world. So UNIDO as a partner is trying also to fill this gap between developing countries and Europe. Developing countries also need progress. They need to be more involved in the value chains, not only exporting raw material, but also adding value on the ground, creating jobs. Europe needs those resources, so there's a deal is possible between Europe and the rest of the world.
Since you mentioned the European Union, we know that UNIDO and the European Union have been close partners for decades on so many projects. Can you share a concrete example of a project that shows how this partnership is driving real change on the ground?
Yes, it's, for example, a switch to circular value chains, which is a global project and helps bringing innovation in the manufacturing sector to also develop the circular economy. It means that avoid pollution and avoid waste. So waste should be avoided of our vocabulary, because it's only raw material that we didn't think of how to use it. But most of the time, if you bring industries around the table, you can do what we call industrial symbiosis, that the waste of one become the raw material of another one. So this is really a circular way. We had a couple of days before, we had the representative diplomats from Pakistan and Bangladesh who came. They benefited from this project. And we could see how many industries in the textile sector, in the different sectors of society, we saw real solutions and how they made side products of waste and how they made more money and more jobs with their waste. So this is really something that it's not only for rich countries, but everyone in the world can have this approach and be more prosperous.
You talked about the Switch to Circular Economy program, which, as you mentioned, helps industries transition to circular models. And you talked about some good examples, but what are the biggest challenges that you have encountered so far in this program?
So in this program, most of this is information, because, you know, most people, you know, particularly if you're talking about small and medium enterprises, they don't have this knowledge. They don't know even that it exists, because sometimes solutions are created somewhere in the world that could work for you. And you need sometimes a bit to accompany those SMEs through programs like we do funded by the European Union, because you need, of course, skills. You need also technology, and you need also financial support. So, but when you do that, the potential is enormous. We have a big program like this for more than 10 years, what we call the Switch Med, which is for 1,000 Mediterranean countries, 7 of them. And we could show that investing 100 in those companies produce 4 or 5 times the private investment. So how to use public money in a useful way is to put this money in those programs of circular economy, because then they multiply the private, local private investment by 4 or 5 or more sometimes.
SDG 9 focuses on industry, innovation and infrastructure. If you could pick one action that would accelerate progress on this goal globally, what would that be?
I think it's really the clean tech. Is really moving toward the clean tech, because it provides better jobs. We see everywhere that it drives the economy. There's no slowdown on this sector, and it brings social progress. It brings innovation. It brings better also wages. And you need better wages, of course, to give hope to people. So I think it's a good message. It helps modernize the economy, clean up also what has been the, of course, a negative past of industry, but bring a future for industry, and at the same time develop the prosperity. So I think it's a good message. Clean tech going green is a very good message, I think, for the future.
As you already mentioned, one of the biggest, most pressing issue is the global imbalance between advanced economies and the developing nations. As advanced economies are heavily investing in this fourth industrial revolution and new industrial policies, how can we make sure that developing countries are not left behind in this transformation?
Now, this is very important. But the global rebalancing is benefiting different countries. So it's not only North-South. For example, one of the biggest trends has been the relocalization of industries to Asia. But it has been very good for social progress because those countries were poor, China, South Korea, and others, and they lifted more than 1 billion people from poverty. So globally, it's very good. The figures are very good. It has also created, losers in the North. That's why you have the MAGA in the US, you had the Brexit in Europe, you had the Gilets jaunes in France, because in many places in the North, people are desperate. They lost their job, they lost their hope, and now they are the revolt, they are the social revolt in the North. At the same time, other developing countries didn't catch up with this, it's particularly Africa. Africa has all the necessary resources. It has young people, workforce, biggest workforce in the world is in Africa. And at the same time, they didn't benefit from this. This is why we believe being placed at the UNIDO Brussels office and in charge of developing the political dialogue and the cooperation with the European Union, we believe really in a partnership, international partnership, for example, between Africa and Europe, but also with Latin America, with Asia, to make sure that the global supply chain can continue to provide growth everywhere, in the South, in the North. And it can be done if we don't reproduce always the same model of just extracting resources from poor countries without creating local jobs. So now, if the New Deal, and this is what the Global Gateway is all about, also the critical raw material legislation of EU puts clearly, black on white, that industrialization should be part of this deal. It means that while Europe needs those materials that are in Africa, for example, in Latin America or everywhere, there should be a good sharing of the value. Means that local jobs, better paid jobs, more modern jobs, and that everyone will find a way to become more prosperous together.
And one of the most key points here is industrial decarbonization. We know that industrial decarbonization could cut one-third of global CO2 emissions. But we are also seeing today that many countries are switching to new political mentalities and, let's say, not prioritizing green transition and circular economy principles as they used to. So in this world, in this polycrisis that we are facing, how could we approach the issue from an industrial diplomacy perspective?
I think what is important is to show what we try to demonstrate in UNIDO, that it is good for business. When you are more energy efficient, so you waste less resources. We have seen with our latest industrial statistic globally that although you have increased industrial production, you have a decoupling of CO2 emission, which is the first time it happened in history, that before you had growth of industrial production, you have growth of CO2 emissions. But this time now we see very positively a decoupling. It means that now the industries all over the world, and it was not only in Europe and in the US or Japan, it's global. We see now that industry is becoming more energy efficient. Why is it good for companies? Because energy is a large cost. So if you cut in your emissions, in your inefficiencies, of course, you become more profitable. So that's one sign. Now, how to bring those who try to divert from this idea of decarbonization? I think, I don't know if people, consumers, are happy to have always this fossil pollution, because beyond global warming, it's also the particles that you breathe every day and the pollution. Maybe some governments want to divert, but I think the general public will not divert. And anyway, there will be more and more conditions, for example, for the European market. Mm-hmm. Europe has set up But the big objective of decarbonization by 2050 is there. So those who would like to trade with Europe and export to Europe will have to deal with the conditions of the single market. So it means that if they don't want to decarbonize, they will not have access to the European market anymore. And it's still the biggest market of the world.
But also to achieve that, we need multilateralism. But some say that in today's world, multilateralism is in decline and international cooperation is very damaged, especially by the new dominant factor in international relations, which is transactionalism and leader diplomacy. How do you see that?
To address this rebalancing, some countries, the US and others, everyone starting to put conditions and making international trade more difficult. So maybe we have to address this rebalancing. You know, when we were preparing for the Sustainable Development Goals under SDG 9, we had there were discussions maybe to put a certain percentage of industry in the GDP. For example, it could be 15% or 20% that each country should have this percentage. Indeed, we didn't manage, but we put that the poorest should double their part of industry in their GDP, in global development, the wealth of the countries. It's important that we keep this idea of bringing all countries together. I think this will continue to be a big objective. And every day you see that even insurances themselves, they highlight this need for decarbonization, because you have now some areas in the world where you cannot have an insurance anymore because of climate catastrophes. So this is a fact, and this is something that industry and all countries need to address.
When we talk about diplomacy, we still talk about it in a more traditional sense of diplomacy between countries and between different ruling political entities, let's say. And UNIDO states that there is this term eco-industrial diplomacy, which is, I think, very important. How does this idea redefine traditional diplomacy, in your opinion, and especially in today's interconnected and globalized world?
If you look, as I said, for supporting industrial diplomacy and eco-industrial diplomacy, there are two conditions. One is to recognize that industry is central. We talk about this for prosperity, for climate, for environment. Industry is central. It's to recognize that. So when you look at all the negotiations, you'll talk about climate diplomacy, you'll talk about blue economy diplomacy, ocean diplomacy. But all those diplomacy, if you look at that, it's all about limiting the impact of industry. That's all of this. All those negotiations, Paris Agreement, it's all about preserving our climate, preserving our earth. But all of this can be done only through the transformation of industry. So that is recognition that industry is central. Second is to know and understand better industry. I think most people now, particularly in advanced countries, they are led by services. They don't even know what it is about industry. And each object that you have on you or around you, for each object that you produce, you need an ecosystem. It's an ecosystem of services. You need the material. You need to transform it. You need machineries. You need so many services, maintenance services. You need trade. You need transport. You need bank. You need insurance. So, and then internal global supply chains are a connection between all those ecosystems. So it's very complex when you work on it. This is the recognition, also the complexity, and you need to understand more. And then you need to understand who can play this industrial diplomacy, or we want an eco-industrial diplomacy. The industrial diplomacy that will lead to have clean tech as the lead to make sure that our world will be safer. And you have governments, of course, classical diplomats, discussing among themselves, but you need also industry, the private sector. And you need academia and civil society. You can lead this new revolution, green revolution, only if there's a consensus in the society. And, you know, if you're a mayor of a city, you need to be part of it, because it's about how you will manage your land, what are the conditions we'll give to companies, what are the jobs that are going to develop in your city. When you're in the private sector, you have to negotiate agreements, sometimes with local governments, but also with other companies because you need to make arrangements with them in a certain legal framework. So all of this are negotiations at many places, and we call that industrial or eco-industrial diplomacy. I think it's very important. I was explaining this recently to diplomats, and in fact, in their everyday life, they know a bit more about trade now, or, you know, economic diplomacy. What is the difference between industrial diplomacy, economic diplomacy? What do we see in economic diplomacy? Most of the time is a more, I would say, nationalistic way, is how a country will try to pursue and push its economic interest. And industrial diplomacy, as we think of it, it's more kind of a multilateral approach. How to combine this willingness of each country to be prosperous, which is legitimate, but how to keep public goods that will make this work. Because, for example, when you have a product, if you want to sell it in a different market, you need international norms. Otherwise, you will have to produce your project for each small market, so it becomes very difficult for the producers. But if you agree on international standards and norms, your product can be sold everywhere in the world. And most of the time, to produce those international norms, you need people to meet. People from industry, people from civil society, from government, they meet 1 or 2 years to establish that they agree on the standard that it works for them. So without those institutions that make global trade easier, I think everyone with its own economic diplomacy will fail. And we believe that if we work together, we can continue to have an international system that works. But also we need it more sustainable for the environment, but also that brings social progress for people.
And my last question, you already mentioned it a bit, but it's going to be a critical one. Today, we see that many industries are still responsible for the climate change that we are facing. So how optimistic should we be about the industry is going to do the right thing and be more conscious? Because we still see many organizations and companies under many industries are still using our water immensely and making still human rights violations. So how are we going to actually be optimistic about the industry is going to do the right thing?
So we need to work on different ways. So you can have also regulation. Like, for example, the European Union puts very, very serious regulations to make sure that people in the value chain respect human rights and social progress and also environmental things. The second way is also to show industries, this is what we try to do all over the world, that they're going to be more sustainable if they are doing social and environmental progress. I told you, if you decrease your bill in energy, if you decrease your water bill or everything that you use for your production, you become more sustainable, you're more profitable. But also in the long run, if you want to remain on the market, you cannot only use the fact that your employees are the lowest wages. Because at some point, you will always have another country, another company which provides something even cheaper. So you have to move more on the quality. Quality means better skills, people more higher salary, and that's the way you move. Of course, when you provide this cheap, low-cost production, yeah, it can work. But after a while, it doesn't work anymore. We've seen that in many countries in Asia, in Latin America. You need to bring innovation, social progress, and then you remain on the market. So that's a condition that we see.
Thank you, Mr. Ibito, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Christoph Ibito. His message is clear. Industry can be a force for good, reducing emissions, creating fairer jobs, and driving sustainable growth, especially when countries and companies collaborate instead of competing alone. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Everything is Changing on your favorite podcast platform and share it with someone interested in climate, industry, and development. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing.